Welcome to episode 8 of The Rink. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, we're going all over the place. We're going to be talking with Alana from Canucks and Beyond about Roberto Luongo and his shutout streak. We're talking to Steve Lepore from Puck the Media about Versus and their ratings. And we're going to be talking to Earl Sleek about Brian Burke and his exit as GM. All of that, plus Tom and I have our usual witty banter. That's next on The Rink. The perfect matchup for the week this week seemed to be the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers, which went to the shootout. And, Tom, I know that you saw the Scotty Hartnell epic fail shootout attempt in the sixth round, and it was horrible.
It was. I think it was one of the worst efforts I've seen in a long time. And Wyshynski's got a great article over Puck Daddy on it. You know, you can see first his frustration and his tantrum on the bench, and then he comes up with the just. It's almost impossible to describe how bad it is. I mean, he loses the puck once, and then whips, and then eventually just runs over the goaltender. And I'm not usually a wow.
Yeah. Well, and it's sixth round. You're down one at this point. If you lose, if you miss this, the game's over. And right. this was what he came up with. And you know, who knows? Maybe the ice was horrible, all of that. But it still isn't as bad as the Dennis Weidman legs flying out from under, kind of, you know, catching right. an edge, catching the boards, catching everything but the puck in the net. But still, that was kind of pathetic.
Well, yeah, for a sixth round, as you say, it's the last round of the shootout. Your team's down a goal. You're supposed to be a leader on the ice. You're wearing an A on your sweater, blah, 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 blah. And then you come up with that, and that just tells you what's you know, what the state of affairs are in Philly. So
there seemed to be a little bit of a moment there between the two, as between Sabourin and Hartnell. And I wonder what was said.
Yeah, I wonder.
I mean, it's a caption this photo, you know, this photo moment. I would love to. That's the number one argument right there for miking up the goalies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. That'd be great.
I don't know. Maybe he didn't say anything in the moment and just gave him a look, but I would love to know.
And, you know, look, he did that against the backup goaltender. It's mm-hmm. not like that was Marc-Andre Fleury or Marty Brodeur. I mean, that's not taking anything away from Danny Sabourin. He's a good goaltender, and don't get me wrong. But still, it's not. He shouldn't have been that much in Hartnell's head that he can't hold on to the puck. So,
yeah.
I don't know. He must have been distracted with, you know.
Maybe he saw a shiny balloon or something.
You know, maybe he was so worried about the bet that he made on the game or something along those lines. And, you know, speaking of bet, you know, we've got Rick Tocchet now taking over. That's just a bad segue for Rick Tocchet taking over for Barry Melrose over in Tampa.
Well, you know, there's only one thing that that could take away from the big news out of California with Brian Burke ending his GM career at with the Ducks, and that would be Barry Melrose getting fired. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Brian Burke in a little bit with Earl Sleek of Battle of California. But Barry Melrose, I mean, gets fired this week from the Tampa Bay Lightning as head coach, and which is a move that I think that only that most people weren't surprised with necessarily, but at the same time, some would only couldn't believe actually happened this short. Usually, you give a head coach a little bit more of a chance, but the reports coming out about Melrose seemed to be that it wasn't just the record as being the problem.
No, it sounded like he, from what I've read, that he was just completely unprepared for today's game, and. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and he said, you know, this is what you get for hiring a career sub-500 coach who hasn't coached in 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the game has changed completely, and the players have changed completely, and everything else. So, you know, the thing I have to, you know, wonder about is, you know, how quickly are the NHL going to pull the Carey Milbank, Barry Melrose ad from the because, you know, he's going to be doing a lot of scouting if he wants to at NHL.com. So
he didn't look very prepared for that commercial either.
Yeah, he didn't. So, you know, if that's a harbinger of his tenure or reign or reign of terror or whatever you want to call it in Tampa, there it is. But, you know, he's superseded now by he's superseded by Rick Tocchet, of all people, which I just find really fascinating. Because here we go from, what, 2 years from being the Pete Rose of hockey with one of the biggest gambling scandals in the history of the NHL to head coach.
Yeah. Well, that scandal got swept under the rug pretty fast, forgiven mm-hmm. really quickly in the NHL and all around. It seems like everybody wanted Rick Tocchet to come back to be a part of the NHL and to be a sure. coach so much that they kind of forgot about everything else. It's kind of the pick and choose, I think, of what are we going to be mad about and what are we not. I wonder how much of this of his hiring was for this exact situation. In case Melrose fails, we've got a guy that we can go to.
Yeah, that's probably very true. Similar to what happened with Denny Savard over and Joel Quenneville over in Chicago. Mm-hmm. On a side note, I find it interesting just to bring up, just to harken back to something you just said about it getting swept under the rug. Remember that the outcry and the amount of jail time that everybody was looking at went completely by the boards and swept under the rug the minute they found out that there was a New Jersey State Trooper involved.
Mm. Yeah, so, it suddenly became about something else.
It quickly became something about the state's not going to prosecute the state on this.
Yeah.
And that's a very normal response. So I'm not at all surprised to see Tocchet basically, I wouldn't say get away with it, because I never had any problem with him doing this in the first place, but, you know, relative to current law and you know, his contract with the NHL and all that, yeah, it was a problem, and he violated his contract with the NHL at the time, and now all of a sudden he's, you know, now gets to be the head coach again in Tampa. I find it very interesting how that these things seem to work themselves out.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. It always seems to me like in the NHL or that we forgive the ones that we want and we don't forgive the ones that we don't want. And,
sure.
And if you made a minor mistake and we're not a big fan of you, you're out the door, and we're never going to hear from you again. You're mired to play in a very small country in Europe, and if you're not, you're going to be back.
Exactly. And Rick Tocchet is, you know, and I'm not saying that Gretzky had anything to do with this, but he's just part of the NHL. So he's been a longstanding member of the NHL community for a long time. And he's not, and don't get me wrong, I think he's from what I can tell, I think he's a great guy. I loved him as a player, even though he played for Philly. He was one of those guys who came up through the league as a fighter and eventually became a 400 goal scorer or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who's worked really hard at what he's done. He's been extremely successful. He's extremely committed to the game and to the league. So, you know, some people, I guess, the NHL feels are, I guess, worth forgiving.
Yeah.
And so,
well, speaking of being back, you mentioned Denny Savard, and he's back with the Blackhawks as a kind of an ambassador to the game, another ambassador to the game. That's just a situation I still don't know what to think about. They get rid of him. They fire him. Four games into the season, replace him with Joel Quenneville, and now he's back with the Blackhawks. I mean, I've been fired from jobs before, but I don't go back.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Remember when the story was breaking that Al Strachan, who's not a guy that I have a whole lot of respect for, but I got to give him credit on this one. I saw him on the hot stove on CBC, and he said that the move for Savard to bring him in as head coach was probably done when the organization was at a real low point, probably the lowest point it's ever been in its history. And so they brought in Savard as a goodwill thing for the fans, bring in one of the great Blackhawks of all time and have him coach the team. But once the team was ready to make the next step, they really needed to bring in somebody to coach them who could take them to that next level. And it just happened to be that Quenneville was available to become a member of the organization, and then it just, you know, serendipitously, I guess, you know, worked its way up that, you know, and I'm sure that when Quenneville was hired, this was in the back of everybody's mind. And maybe Savard was good with it the entire way. He just wanted to get a little bit of experience of head coaching at the NHL level.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him down in the minors coaching as a head coach just for some more experience.
Exactly.
At some point. I mean, it's kind of where the path seems to be leading. It's just kind of that simple reminder that, you know, people like us who we watch the games a lot. We listen to the talk, and it's kind of hard because we're not as close to the game, obviously, as the people who run it. And we just don't know sometimes what exactly is going on. It's certainly a question I would love to ask some of the Blackhawks management, and also, you know, of course, ask about the Melrose situation. It's just another situation where we're just not, you know, I wish that we could actually get in these people's heads. I don't even think the beat writers are able to enough to be able to say this is exactly what happened.
Yeah, it is hard. And, you know, one of the things I always try and do is, you know, when I'm commenting on this stuff, is to try and take what data I've got and draw the best conclusions from it I can, and not always to jump to either, certainly the worst. I never like to think of the worst of people. It's, you know, unless they play for Philadelphia. but seriously, you know, when you have a situation with involving, you know, men and who are responsible and successful men, similar to like the Teppo Numinen situation last year, where Buffalo felt like they had to suspend him, and everybody had a hue and cry, and there was a, you know, minor hue and cry about Savard getting fired 4 days into the season or 4 games into the season. You know, that we don't really know what's going on, and you know, that kind of shocking move from normally reasonable people should, you know, you should take a pause before you react emotionally and say, okay, but this sounds out of character, so why would they make a move like this? But, you know, I generally try and do that when I'm thinking these things through before I, you know, go any further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just usually the best course of action is to stop and think and maybe take the contrarian opinion just to see where it leads you.
Yeah. Well, they're giving us ample opportunity at this point. Hey, sure. I wanted to ask you about new poster boy for the NHL, Milan Lucic.
Ooh, wow. I just caught that the video of the beatdown he put on one of my least favorite people in the game, Mike Komisarek. Of course, if Komisarek was wearing a Buffalo Sabres uniform, I would be very happy. he is one of those guys that I can honestly say that I hate him because he plays for the Habs, and I'd love him if he played for Buffalo, not like somebody like Sean Avery, which is completely different,
right?
Or Chris Neal.
Or my feelings these days on Darcy Tucker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, Komisarek is a guy who's an incredibly aggressive defenseman. He sets he loves to set the tone for the game and be in control. So when he's on the ice, it's his ice, you know, and he's in charge of the entire. And that's his job. It's his goal. That's his gig, man. And for Lucic to put down such a unbelievable beatdown,
over. It was impressive. 13-14 punches. There were maybe two that hit the helmet, and the rest were all in the face. It was just a punch in the face contest that Komisarek had no business being in. And that was, even a couple weeks ago when the Bruins played the Vancouver Canucks, the people over at the Crazy Canucks podcast were showing off their love for Lucic, and you know, same thing. They thought this is going to be, you know, should be the big game, and they were impressed. He's an impressive guy in this regard.
I saw him the other night against Buffalo, or last week against Buffalo. And it was a good first period between both teams, and it was really well played, 14-12 on shots on goal, and even though it was still reasonably defensive and everything else. And by the end of the middle of the second period, he had single-handedly beaten them out of the building.
Hmm. Wow,
he had like he had 8 or 9 hits registered through 2 periods, and people would hit it. I mean, and it's not like you know, Mayer and Gostad weren't going back after him. No, they did, and he didn't give a damn. He just kept going after him again, and he was just unbelievable. And I think, and of course, the rest of the Bruins are feeding off that, and he's just peaked. I think he's starting to peak, and it's going to be very interesting to, you know, see where this goes.
Well, especially in Boston, which, you know, even for an original six team, this is a team that that's kind of mired a little bit in obscurity behind so much successful Boston-area sports. You know, look at Fenway, look up the street to the Patriots in the same building with the Celtics. And where have the Bruins been lately? They've been having too many goaltending questions, which seem to be sorting themselves out just fine right now, thank you. They've right. And if this is the kind of thing that gets the Bruins not only back into the game, but back into the hearts and minds of the Boston fan base, that's a wonderful thing.
It is a good thing. It's a bad thing for me because I'm a Buffalo fan.
For
but
me.
It's a great, but it's a great thing for the NHL. And from what I've seen so far this season, and I've seen Boston twice now, and if they continue to play the way they're playing right now, which we'll see if they can sustain it. It's a very, very difficult way to play hockey for 82 games. And, it may be they're right now, I think, they're the best team in the Northeast, bar none. I don't even think it's close.
Hmm.
And then I haven't seen Montreal since the opening night of the season, so I don't, I haven't really watched them. And the couple of times I've caught them here or there, that didn't look very impressive. So, right now, Boston, they just look like the strongest team in the Northeast right now, and possibly in the Eastern Conference.
Well, we're going to have to see where they wind up. Nobody would have thought a few months ago that they'd be doing much of anything. So it's a nice thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah, well, they were mostly picked middle of the pack. They should be a playoff team and whatnot. But Peter Chiarelli said he wanted to bring back the Big Bad Bruins,
and we got him.
Yeah, it's happening.
The big news this week was Brian Burke stepping down as GM from the Anaheim Ducks, and we wanted to talk to Earl Sleek and find out how he felt about it.
I mean, I'm kind of for it now that I think about it, because if he's not staying, there's actually not that much the Ducks have to do the rest of this year. They're right against the cap, and really the only move I can see is, once there's cap room, they'll bring up Bobby Ryan. So in terms of, general manager moves, I don't think there's a lot coming the rest of this year. The only thing that has to be done is re-signing some free agents, and you might as well have the new guy do that. I don't really know that much about Bob Murray, really. I don't follow the Ducks that well, I guess, but he claims to be Burke's right-hand man, so that seems good enough.
To me, it's been there were three things that really helped the Ducks become kind of important in the media in California and in the eyes of the fans, and that's almost winning the Stanley Cup, and Brian Burke. And Burke is really good at sticking his nose in the media. So I start to wonder if he's going, his departure is going to kind of push the Ducks a little bit more into that that bin of obscurity that sometimes they get caught in when they're not the big, huge topic of the day.
Yeah, they've won enough, though. We have enough enemies around the league, though, that they'll still be pretty big, but I'll definitely miss the mouse. First, the guy would say something about everything, and while, that was tiresome, it was still welcome.
Right. As a blogger, he always gives you plenty of fodder.
I'm never a guy who's ever really wanted to talk to players or anything like that. They're very reserved or anything, but I really would have liked to talk to Brian Burke. That's the one guy I would have ever, wished to interview.
This might actually be the time, then. He may be willing to talk a little bit more now that he's not beholden to that job.
I'd be a terrible interviewer, though. I just, it would pretty much just go to a bar and get drunk with Burke.
That would be wildly entertaining.
that's a very interesting image. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't write anything down. It would be terrible. But
plus, he does have the background as a lawyer, so, if you had a problem after leaving the bar, you'd be perfect for it,
Right.
He's the guy you want right there.
He's the guy I'd like to watch, a couple hockey games with, just to hear him talk about, I don't care. But I feel I've learned something from him.
Yeah, he's got, obviously he built up a Ducks team that won a Stanley Cup. In a way, I would think that he's going to be kind of beloved in California. He's never going to have to buy a drink in a bar in Anaheim again. But where do you see him going at this point? Do you think he's going to stay within the Western Conference, or is it just time to move on to the East for him?
Yeah, I think he's pretty much expressed he's going East, and I think a Register writer gave him a 99.99% chance of going to Toronto. So, But I actually don't, that's the one thing I'm not concerned with now. 29 other teams can worry about that.
Yeah, true. Yeah, the scuttlebutt out of Canada is that it's all about him taking over Toronto. But of course, it's like everything else. Everybody's going to Toronto, so I take that you know, rumor or, you know, conclusion, the same way I take, you know, every free agent, potential free agent signing, which is the Leafs are involved in everything because, you know, Brian Burke's going to go there and you know, work for the Leafs for nothing, and because just for the honor of going to work for Toronto and all that stuff, you know, so it's the classic, you know, HF boards, you know, Toronto is the...
It might not be bad for him. I mean, Toronto's got a lot of, you know, media scrutiny for sure, but they also got a lot of doomed expectations. And, you know, he can be patient in a sense.
Well, yeah, I guess. And but, you know, Ron Wilson's actually got them playing really well right now, so their expectations are immediately starting to rise again. And but if anybody can handle the circus that is Toronto, it's Brian Burke.
Yeah, he'll love it. I mean,
yeah, he'll...
Well, Bob Murray's not new to the organization, obviously, and he's taking over. But my, you know, of course, my question then becomes what to make of Randy Carlyle. Is he? Do you feel he's pretty secure in his job at this point?
Yeah, you know, he's got the cups, you know, so and he got a 2-year extension sometime last season, so he's probably set. They gave Bob Murray 3 years past this year, I believe, so he seems to be the guy for sure, not just any temporary fill-in. And we'll see where it goes. Like, I feel like I won't be able to know what Bob Murray's all about till next summer, because there's a lot that can be done next summer. But this year, it's just pretty much riding it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see who he signs, because really, the Ducks have a ton of spots to fill next summer. And
right.
That's one thing I really, just, you know, I do like about Brian Burke. And Toronto, you know, you might have your gripes, but he is a good general manager. But he has left a lot of freedom for this next general manager to not necessarily just ride out Burke's team forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can make a mark.
As opposed to how he left the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
Honestly, if there's a black mark on Burke's record, it's the state that he left the Canucks and Dave Nonis.
I watched On the Fly, and we're critical that, you know, the Ducks only have Pronger sign next year, and looked at that as a real negative. But, you know, while that is, you know, can be scary, I think certain people can be re-signed, and it's up to the new guy to do it.
And now, how many question for you, Earl? How many RFAs do you have? How many Group 2 RFAs are in the mix? That's the big one. Are we looking at?
I think almost everyone's unrestricted. I don't think we have anyone to deal with because.
So there are no offer sheets. So Getzlaff and Perry and Kunitz are not RFAs right now.
They're all on 5 or 4 year deals now.
Right.
So basically, we have those three signed. Solani signed for one more year.
Oh, right. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong list.
Yeah, Bobby Ryan and Ryan Carter. So there's like 6 forwards. The entire checking line's unrestricted, and right. Everyone on the fourth line is as well.
Right.
So there's a lot there to work with, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of expensive players, but. You know, there's a lot to build around, too.
Thank you so much, Earl, for taking a little time and talking to us about the Ducks and what's going on there.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I also talked to Steve Lepore from Puck the Media about Versus, the American cable provider for the National Hockey League. Versus had its highest ratings ever for a regular season game for the November 11th matchup between the Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins. But the numbers didn't seem all that high to me. In fact, they look kind of downright scrawny. Is the NHL on Versus really drawing that big of an audience?
Well, part of that is true, but part of that is that the World Series of Poker drew 1.9 million viewers on the same night.
Wow.
Yeah. And we drew about 500,000, 600,000. So, yeah, part of it is looking at the scale of Versus, but part of it, you know, really is kind of true.
I always forget to look at the competition and what else is out there when they have these games. The Monday night, Tuesday night games, of course, for me are a little bit of a tough sell, especially considering you have Saturday locked up by the CBC, and you see those numbers, mm-hmm. and everything, of course, looks gigantic by comparison. But is
what you have to do for CBC though. Multiply every rating, every viewership number by about 10.
Mm-hmm.
So the Leafs-Habs game about a week ago drew 1.5 million viewers. That would be like a football game getting about 15 million viewers in America.
That's true. That's true.
Because Well, there's obviously 30 million people in Canada, 300 million people in the U.S., so you have to look at it that way.
Well, and this is something that Versus should hopefully be able to build on. Do you know if they have any more plans, if they have any plans to do anything special about this?
I don't think so. This is a big week for them, though. They have Stanford USC later in the week. And obviously they have to build on it by expanding their brand and getting people who watch college football to watch NHL coverage is a big way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if USC Stanford outdrew almost every regular season game Versus has ever aired for hockey. So it's all about connecting Versus's brand from watching hockey on Monday and Tuesday to getting them to watch football on Saturday and vice versa.
That's true. Now, look at this matchup, of course. I mean, it's the classic matchup from the Stanley Cup Finals last season. But it's nice to see that, you know, these kinds of rivalries and this kind of interest is generating itself in the NHL instead of the NHL trying to manufacture with divisional rivalries. Do you think that they're going to look for more of these kinds of games in the future for places like Versus, or do you think that they're just going to let the chips fall where they may and accept what they can get?
Well, I wrote something when the new NHL schedule format was released that I thought that the new schedule was made for TV, basically, because you could on any given night put, you know, the Rangers against Dallas or Philadelphia against Detroit or Boston against Colorado, and those are matchups that stretch your audience from across the country because, you know, when you hear Boston-Buffalo, there's a very limited range of people who are going to be watching.
Mm, that's a good point. Yeah,
and Pittsburgh and Detroit, you get people from east of Pittsburgh watching, and anyone west of Detroit who's a Wings fan watching. So, and those two teams are kind of branded as America's teams at this point anyway.
That's true. That's true. We're trying to extend the brand in and going a little more instead of the regional broadcast. I hadn't thought of it in that way. So also, I'm sorry?
Schedule is definitely made for TV, and, you know, the fact that the Red Wings and Penguins are going to be playing again on NBC in February just kind of shows off how this schedule was a little better than the last one.
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't realize that they were going to be playing again on, and being able to put that on the national broadcast of NBC should help Versus build a little bit.
Well, it's on the Flex schedule. I put that in air quotes because obviously they're going to pick that matchup.
Yeah. Oh, I would. That's looking to be gold now.
The other game is Nashville-Dallas that day, so.
Given your choices.
So you're thinking even if Crosby, Malkin, Datsyuk, and Zetterberg are all dead and buried, I think they'd choose that game.
Well, also, it's such a something that happened this past week. Doc Emmerich at the Hockey Hall of Fame was given the Foster Hewitt Award.
Mm-hmm. And we're all very happy for that around here. And I basically wrote something about it last week and, telling the viewers how their Doc and by extension Chico Resch sort of made me into the hockey fan that I am. You know, it just doesn't feel right to listen to another game without him. And I got an email back yesterday from Doc Emmerich, and he was very nice, very complimentary, and then his attorney showed up to my dorm room, and, well, I've just been released a couple minutes ago. No, he was very nice, very happy. I'm going to try and see him after the Devils-Washington game on Saturday, which I'm sure it won't be that hard because it's really hard to get people to a Devils game lately.
Yeah, the attendance numbers coming out of New Jersey are not favorable.
Yeah, what I found out was they comped 100 tickets to a North Jersey public school about a day before the Devils Rangers game. not even Rangers fans want to come to Newark. There's a problem.
Wow, that's yeah.
And also some of that you have to look into Marty Brodeur being down and the draw of seeing him play is obviously there for some people.
Yeah, speaking of which, how's Kevin Weeks holding up? Is he the goaltender of the moment for the Devils, or are they going? Think they're going to be looking elsewhere?
Well, there's already a goaltending controversy, so that's not good. And the problem is that whenever you have Weeks and Clemenson in there, they seem to be giving up. They play well. They play very, very well. But they always give up a goal that you know that Marty would have stopped, or probably even my grandmother could have stopped. If you saw the Rangers game on Wednesday, Chris Drury came in and blasted a shot from the top of the point that really just had to be stopped. And I think Kevin's a great guy. I think he's a good goaltender, but you know, maybe it's time for the Devils to look elsewhere. And you know, there's a situation. I saw them in person play Edmonton on Sunday. That kid, Drew and Delorier, I guess it is. He played very well. So Edmonton definitely has a goaltending controversy. I think they'd want to look there.
Well, they seem like goaltending controversies are everywhere, but. If they can free up some cash, maybe they can look elsewhere. Perhaps they can, to ask your grandmother. She did go second round, if I remember correctly.
Out of the Quebec Major Junior League.
Well, Steve Laporte, thank you so much for helping me out here and coming on the show.
Anytime, James.
Well, last up, and certainly not least, one of my favorite bloggers out there, Alana from Canucks and Beyond. And we're talking, of course, about who else but Roberto Luongo.
Bobby Lou in his shutout streak. It was so beautiful, and then it was over.
Well, all good things have to come to an end, and that's kind of the pain of, I think, of these long shutout streaks. You know, what was it? Over 200 minutes. How long was it?
242 minutes and 36 seconds.
Not that anybody's counting, but...
Not that anybody's counting. I was going to take measure of the partial seconds, but I thought that would be obnoxious.
That would be... hang on, let me get back to the tape. Let me see exactly how many seconds it was.
I actually do have a screenshot of the exact moment that it ended.
Wow.
It's
now
ugly,
that
actually.
Is fandom. That is fandom.
No, not really. I was just in a mood.
Well, that's a hell of a streak, and it is kind of everything does have to kind of come to that weird end. And I don't know, as a fan, is it a little is it that conflict of being proud of it and at the same time being sad that it's over, or is it?
Well, I think when it was a great streak, and there's no question it was impressive. But I actually didn't really find myself that obsessed with the actual streak itself, as I was with his improvement in play. The time before the streak started, he'd had a lot of up and down games this year, a few brilliant games, but mostly pretty mediocre for him, for his level of play. And it was, you could tell it was going to, I wasn't too worried about it or anything. You know, he's going to get his groove eventually. It's Luongo, but it was taking a little while. And then he had a meeting with his goalie coach, who showed up in Vancouver unexpectedly last week. That's Ian Clark. And I don't quite know what the hell Ian Clark did with him, but they just had this one or two sessions together. And all Clark said afterwards was, sometimes it just the tiniest little things in your positioning can totally throw you off. And from that point on, Luongo didn't let in a goal, you know, and has been playing brilliantly. So I'm really pleased with that. Plus, you know, he broke his own record, which he set last year. So that he got that accomplishment, whether it means anything to him or not. So that's great. And let's be realistic. I mean, it's a pretty huge thing to break the NHL record, to get even close to what Brian Boucher did a few years ago. So what is that, 330-something minutes or whatever?
Oh, 320?
It's
games,
just insane.
Something like that.
Five-plus games. Yeah, it was just incredible what he did. That backup goalie from out of nowhere, I think he was at the time, right, playing for Phoenix?
Yeah.
And, so, you know, that was a nice thing to start. I mean, if we had gotten to, like, game six or game five, and it's, like, 5 minutes away from breaking Boucher's record, then, yes, I probably would have emotionally collapsed, you know, when it ended. But at this stage, it was just a great experience. It's really good to see him playing well. And, I've got no complaints at all.
Well, it's certainly shoehorning the Vancouver Canucks up in the standings. I mean, it's sitting atop the Northwest right now, 19 points with a game in hand tied against Calgary Flames. It's a team that nobody really thought was going to go very far or, you know, do much because of there hasn't been a ton of movement in the team in a division that seems to be a little mired in mediocrity right now.
Isn't that strange, hey? All these years of the Northwest, from my point of view, and I think from a lot of people's point of views, being this just really impressive division, at least through the regular season all the time, the play being, the points always being really close, and some of the most exciting hockey in the league for a few years, especially before the lockout. And then, yeah, total mediocrity. I mean, the Colorado's, you know, not doing so great. Vancouver lost, you know, it's a lot of its star power, aside from Luongo, and so on and so. I mean, Edmonton had obviously went from, you know, the highest of highs to the lowest of lows a few years ago, from Stanley Cup finals to, right, missing the playoffs kind of thing. I mean, all that, yeah, it's changed quite a bit. As for this year, I mean, we may be in first. I didn't even realize that. I thought maybe with last night's loss that Vancouver had fallen out of first in Northwest. I didn't realize that they still were in first. But I don't think it matters too much. I mean, I think they're points apart. I mean, it's 14 games into the season, 15 games into the season, and they went from last to first in, what, like 3 games?
That's right? True.
So we could go from, you know, first to last in, you know, the Western Conference in probably about another 4 if you really put our minds to it. So.
That's true. I'm looking at the Northwest right now, and everything seems to be stacking out by at least at the snapshot of this moment in time in the Northwest by goaltending ranking. I mean, if you went from best goaltending in the Northwest to the worst goaltending in the Northwest, it literally is pretty much filing right in order.
Oh, that's depressing.
Well, and it's depressing unless you're unless you're a Vancouver Canucks fan or a Calgary Flames fan.
Well, no,
fan,
I mean, it's great for that, but it doesn't really indicate great hockey most of the time. How about the goals for, if you resort the information to who has the highest goal scoring? Does it also?
It's closer, but Minnesota Wild, of course, being the strange anomaly who don't score much and don't let much in, so they're and they're sitting right middle of the pack. But still looking at for and against, it looks like Vancouver Canucks are still tops with that 49 goals for and 40 against. It's kind of the best ratio right now, I would say.
Yeah, that's the surprising part to me for sure, is that they, I mean, obviously they can't score their way out of the paper bag sometimes. Last night was just ridiculous, the game against Colorado, but they have had obviously some really stunning games this year where they've put, you know, quite a lot of pucks in the net, much more than I think anyone thought, that for sure, you know. So when Kyle Wellwood is like the local hero, you gotta say that you don't
take
see
a
these
step
things
back,
coming.
Huh?
So I like Kyle Wellwood. I like his story. I like the whole situation. I like the guy, the fact that the guy that everyone enjoyed putting down and making fun of is giving the world a finger and, you know, doing a pretty good job. So that's fun to me. I like seeing his success. But
so
yeah,
do you think, are we going to see a vote for Kyle? Are we going to see a vote for Kyle?
I already started that one. Yeah. No, I've just got to set up a little application or something to make people actually do it. But the write-in vote for Kyle Wellwood. I think I was gonna get the tagline "Vote for the Wood," but nobody else really thought that was good.
Wow.
So I thought that was brilliant.
That might go over in some circles.
Oh, come on! You're no fun, James.
I'm a lot of fun. I'm just not thinking about Kyle Wellwood in that way.
I wasn't thinking of him in that way either. Where's your mind?
Changing the subject. Where do so we're 16 games into the season for the Canucks. They're 9-6-1, and Bobby Lou is kind of shoehorning them along. Is this, moving forward in the season, do you think that this is a team that he's going to have to kind of continue to really carry on his shoulders as much as he has, at least for the last several games?
Yes, I think for the most part, most of the season, he'll have to. That being said, this team is also short some players and could still use signing another center, you know, Matt Sundin notwithstanding, somebody. Or some, you know, just a marquee scorer of some kind would be really nice. I don't see it happening, but it'd be really nice. But if it did happen, then that would change my answer. But as things are right now, I think it's going to be a lot of this. He's got a situation happening right now that's making it more complicated with, you know, even these guys who do score not scoring, like the Sedins, for instance, you know, having some on and off games, that kind of thing. So as they have their good games, hopefully he can let in his 4 goals once in a while. And, when they have the rest of the time, he's just going to have to keep them in games, I think. The only difference between now and last year, I think, is that we seem to score a bit more for some reason, but he was also letting in more, too, so...
You think maybe things are tightening up a little better in the defense than maybe was originally predicted?
I've always thought the defense was really good. So I, I'm sorry, what you mean? You mean going back to a more defensive game? Sorry, I wasn't thinking there. Yes, I think that's probably true. I mean, they can open up and play offensive hockey to some extent, but there's some games where they know their strengths, and it's definitely to fall back. And, you know, like the way they played, I think it was Minnesota the other day, they played them really tight, definitely had their own tendency to trap, which I think I seem to remember hearing Jacques Lemaire getting really excited about that, getting so annoyed because everyone's always accusing his team, the Minnesota Wild, of employing the trap, and he got to experience it on the other side watching the Canucks do it to them, right?
Nobody except for the Minnesota Wild trap and the Devils. That's it. There's only two teams that utilize the trap.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of the conventional wisdom, isn't it? I think it's just because we all like making fun of the Minnesota Wild. But the truth is Vancouver has done it, or done their own version of it, I guess, so quite a lot. And they certainly have played some boring defensive hockey at times. And they have done it a couple times this season, but not as much. So all things considered, I'm pretty happy. I mean, I've seen some pretty exciting offensive play.
It seems like it's been a pretty exciting year so far for the Canucks with the with a couple high-scoring games and the Bobby Lou shutout streak. So hopefully that'll continue, and I know that in the future we're definitely going to call you up again and talk to you a little more about the Canucks, especially as they get a little closer to mid-season.
Well, it'll be my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you.
Well, that's all we have for The Rink this week. Our thanks to Alana from Canucks and Beyond. You can find her site as part of the Kukla's Corner group of blogs at www.kuklascorner.com. Also to Steve Lepore from Puck the Media, which is at puckthemedia.wordpress.com. And also Earl Sleek of the Battle of California joined us. His blog is at battleofcalifornia.blogspot.com. You can find all those links, of course, at our website, which is www.rinkpodcast.com. You can find Tom's writing over at nhl.fanhouse.com and my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Next week, we'd love to hear from you. We want to find out what you're doing for your hockey weekend. Tell us about it by calling our number and leaving a message at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. We want to hear from you, and we'd like to put it on the podcast. So call and leave a message. And thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.